This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs, Connecticut. I am Pedlin Ron, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk. It is March 7th, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call or text at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute to the show or be on as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Ron's rant of the week, starting out. Okay, I'm going to do an update from last week's rant. The update is from the products that are purchased from Vista Outdoors, which is the company that has Camelback and Bell Giro, Blackburn, a number of other items. There's been a lot of feedback in the industry and actually in all of the news. We even saw something, I think Fran and I actually saw something on The Daily Show one night about this and also on Bill Maher. But there's a lot of people that are deciding to boycott their products because they are a major gun maker and also ammunition manufacturer. So anyway, there's been an awful lot of concern out there, and I thought that in the rant today, I would address both sides of the argument here, because Camelback, which is one of the products that is featured by this company, Vista Outdoors, they put a statement out which says a major, this is quote unquote from Camelback, a major concern for the boycott centers around the incorrect assumption that the purchase of any of our products may support a cause that does not fit the mission or values of our product. The statement reads, "That is not the case. Our brand falls within the outdoor product segment of our company, which operates separately from Vista Outdoors shooting sports segment. So I figured I would touch on this a little bit because it's all over the news. Again, you know, it's REI, very, very large retailer. They have decided that they will no longer be carrying any products from Vista Outdoors. I think they're even talking about sending back some product, which is certainly a concern for Vista Outdoors. There's others that are involved with that. Colorado-based Boulder Cycle Sport, also Louisville, Kentucky-based Parkside Bikes, Velocult, Selwood Cycle Repair. All these different companies have said, you know what? Don't really want to support this company because they do make an assault style weapon, and we don't believe in that. So there's a lot of things that are interesting as you look deeper into this. There are a lot of responses out there. Vista Outdoor is also an exhibitor at the NRA's annual trade show, so that's another thing that puts them in the hot seat. So I decided to dig a little further, and of course there's a full response here from Camelback on the Vista Outdoor boycott, and it seems like Camelback is the one that seems to be most affected by this for some reason. I'm really surprised at that, but I think it's because it hits not just cycling but also hiking industries. And so they're the ones that are the first to respond, whereas Bell Helmets and Giro Helmets have not been as open, unless I have not been able to research that properly. Good possibility. So anyway, there's a point that's worth clarifying. While it's been claimed that Vista Outdoor Sports supports the NRA to the tune of $500,000 a year, that's not accurate. In 2017, they spent a total of $514,000 on all lobbying. The vast majority of that did not go to the NRA. This is straight from Vista Outdoors, so that you know that we're giving them a fair shake here. The vast majority did not go to the NRA. Further, looking at some of the legislation they lobbied for, like better gun education and training, some of the positions are pretty easy to endorse. They also are involved that they are involved in some lobbying, and I had another piece here that from a website called Outdoor Life. And Outdoor Life says, think before you boycott guns, public land, and Vista Outdoor. The unintended consequences from REI's resolution to drop Camelback's parent company. And so anyway, once again, in the news, this is the other side of the story here that comes directly from the outdoor industry and also from the Vista Outdoors. So they have here the outdoor rec community needs shooters, that's what they say, specifically because shooters are helping fund the habitat and wildlife that drive hiking, camping, and bird watching. And so I just don't see how an AR-15 will do that. But, you know, that's just my opinion, and you're welcome to...
That was the first thing that I thought. We're not saying don't fund hikers, campers, and shooters.
Right.
But shoot with a rifle, not a semi-automatic weapon.
Not with a military-style weapon.
No, exactly.
And that's it. And when I have this argument with people who say, well, it's not a military-style weapon, it's the M16 from the Vietnam War. That's what this weapon is. It is the M16 from the Vietnam War. It was used for what in the Vietnam War? To shoot animals? No. It was used to kill people. Massive amounts of people at times.
And these kinds of guns are...
I'm not going to fall for this argument. I'm sorry.
These kinds of guns are absolutely devastating. When mm-hmm. they hit people's bodies, they devastate. It's like a bomb went off in your organs. All right. And so right. if you're going to go out hunting, do you need to annihilate the deer, or do you need to shoot the deer in as humane a way as possible? Because you're going to get its meat.
Actually, from a hunter friend of mine, and from also a state police officer who came to my distressed call when I had hit a deer on the side of the road. I've received both of this. The hunters tend to want to use a single shot weapon.
Of course.
And the reason is because if they're hunting a deer, so to speak, let's say it's a deer. If they're hunting a deer and they use that single-shot weapon, they can clearly hit the animal in the head, which is what they would prefer to do,
right.
Not the body. Because
right.
if they hit it in the body, especially towards the back of the body, it spoils the meat.
Because the animal becomes very stressed. You
right,
want the animal
exactly.
to die as quickly and humanely as possible. So
correct.
Shooting in the head is ideal, because then literally the animal doesn't know what hit it.
Right.
Once the animal knows what hits it, it releases the stress hormones, which is why you're saying it spoils the meat. That's
right.
what spoils the meat.
Which when I had hit a deer, a state police officer that came to see me at 11 o'clock at night after I'd hit the deer and called it in, he said, oh, it's too bad you hit it in the back end. And I said, well, what difference does that make?
Because it would have been somebody's dinner.
And then he said, well, you spoil the meat when you do that.
Yeah.
And he said, how long was the deer alive until, you know, I got here? And
yeah.
I said, well, unfortunately, that's why I called you, because, you know, the deer was suffering and I would have really liked to have, you know, disposed of the animal so it wouldn't
suffer.
And
the suffering is the key.
And he said, yeah, that's too bad. But, you know, they use the meat for various places. You know, state institutions will actually use the meat. So they don't throw the deer out if it gets hit. If you hit a deer with your car. So anyway, that's way off track of where we're going here. All the companies that Vista owns, none contribute more money to habitat, wildlife, and public land than its firearm and ammo makers. This funding comes through the Pittman-Robertson Act, which puts 11% excise tax on manufacturers of guns, including ARs, ammunition, and archery equipment. These tax dollars go to the State Department of the Department of the Interior, which then distributes funding to states for habitat conservation, wildlife research, hunter ed courses, and other uses that will increase hunting and outdoor recreation opportunity. According to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, it is the nation's oldest and most successful wildlife restoration program. That's the Pittman-Robertson Act. Hikers, bird watchers, and cyclists who enjoy public lands benefit directly from ammunition and firearm sales, including AR-style rifle sales, and Pittman Robinson funds are apportioned through a formula that accounts for hunting license sales numbers. So the more hunters you have in your state, the more Pittman Robinson funding your state receives. According to Ryan Bronson, who is a Vista Outdoor Director of Conservation and Public Policy, Vista Outdoor paid over $87 million in federal excise taxes during the fiscal year in 2017. Pittman Robertson funds totaled $625 million and were apportioned to states in 2017. And Washington State, where REI is based, received $10.2 million. So I just wanted to bring this up front and let people know that, yeah, we're boycotting their products, but we also, I wanted to give them a fair shake and show the other side. I still don't agree with it. I still am certainly behind the boycott, but I did want to give them a fair shake. Do we have a caller?
We do.
We do.
Yes, we have Michael from Eastford.
Michael from Eastford, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well today, Ron. How are you?
Doing great, thanks.
I just wanted to call in with a slight correction on something you said that
sure.
I think is important for people to understand. You had mentioned that the AR-15 is basically the M16.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that is not true.
Oh, okay.
The M16 had a very specific military purpose, and it's not pleasant to think about, but it's true. The bullet on an M16 was designed to pass through the body cleanly and to cause a major wound.
And so the AR-15 is much worse.
To create attrition on the battlefield,
mm-hmm.
Because most military will not leave their wounded behind. So when you wound somebody, that means you have to send people out to get them and to bandage them and to triage them.
Right.
So the M16 was developed specifically to create chaos on the battlefield without killing a lot of people. And thus, by reducing the numbers of the people on the opposition, then eventually you win the battle through attrition.
Wow, that's very interesting. I didn't know that.
The AR-15, on the other hand, is a totally different weapon.
Mm-hmm.
It is a complete killing machine. When it hits you, you are obliterated inside.
Right.
Right.
The bullet spins, it disintegrates, it causes massive destruction. It
wow.
serves only one purpose, and the purpose is to kill as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
Right.
Wow.
I put up a Facebook Live where I was talking about this, because there was an article by one of the emergency room doctors who worked on the kids at the Parkland shooting. And she said she had never seen anything like it, that usually when you have somebody, it's exactly what you said, Mike, that usually when you work on somebody who has a gunshot wound, there's an entrance wound, there's a pathway, and there's an exit wound. So if it gets your liver,
sure.
it sort of nicks it as it goes by, and you can see the track.
Yep, thank right. you.
And where
right.
the exactly yep. and when but with the AR-15, what she said, she saw these people were dying on the spot, because it's exactly what you said, that the rain of bullets just obliterates the organs inside, and the people don't have a chance.
Yeah, and it doesn't. You don't have to get close. I mean, you don't have to have an accurate shot. You just need to get close enough for it to get in there and do what it does.
All right, I'll say it again, and I'll say it loud and clear. Why are these things on our streets?
They don't belong there, period. Anybody
right.
who thinks otherwise is an idiot.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
I know a little bit about guns, and I come from a certain period of time when there was a certain war going on.
Yes, there was a certain war going on. Yes, I remember it well.
You know, it's smoke. I understand that many of these companies, organizations like Ducks Unlimited, et cetera, do support conservation things, and I laud that. And I'm not truly opposed to hunting, but, you know, a lot of these people, I may live in Eastford, okay?
Yeah,
and
you can't be opposed to hunting if you live in Eastford.
Pardon?
You can't be opposed to hunting if you live in Eastford. You live
in
the woods.
I'm not opposed to hunting, per se, if it's regulated, controlled, and used for the purposes of food.
I agree.
But a lot of people, I know people in this town, like to go out and just shoot raccoons out of trees because they like to see what happens when a bullet hits them.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And sport shooting is, what is it where they say on TV? I call BS.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this country is in total chaos. We are killing people by the hundreds per day. We are the only country, civilized country, on Earth that does this. It's disgusting. I'm sorry to pontificate on this, but it's just, it's immoral. I've dealt with guns in schools. I've had guns in my classroom.
Right, because you were a teacher. Right, yeah.
What goes on in these situations. And I am totally morally opposed to it.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask you, too, because you're a former teacher, how do you feel about arming teachers?
Oh, come on.
I knew the answer before I asked the question, but, you know, because every teacher I know I've asked that same question to, and they all give me the exact same response, if not a more pointed response.
The amount of training that you would be required... That would be required would be inordinate. How about putting classroom supplies? But that's smoke also. Let's deal with guns in teachers' hands, period. There's no way in a moment of crisis when somebody's blasting off 100 to 300 bullets per minute in your classroom that you're going to be sane enough to pull out a pistol.
Right, exactly. Right.
That you actually could shoot the guy. Better you should have a baseball bat and you're standing by the door.
Right, because we know the accuracy of the pistol.
That's
it's
right.
Not very good,
it's
especially if you're shaking
bat,
like a leaf. And
a baseball bat to the head will work.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, frying pan.
Yeah, really. I'll let you go. I'm sorry to take up a lot of time.
No, not at all, Michael. I love this. That's great.
But,
no, very good.
All this stuff that they're saying, these typical platitudes, talking points are just smoke. It's avoidance behavior on the topic.
Yes, very much so. All right. Well, thank you very much for your comment. I really appreciate it. And thanks for listening, Michael. I appreciate that, too.
Have a good day.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. There you have it. We got a little education here about the difference between an M16 and an AR-15 from Michael from Eastford. And a big, big shout out there for Michael, because I was unaware of just how much damage one of these weapons does.
Oh, the AR-15, yeah, like I said, it was an incredible article about the doctor in the emergency room who talked about those injuries.
I gave Vista Outdoor their little shake here and let them know, just like I did when I had the good senator from Montana on, and gave his side of the view of him and his dislike of bicycles. So I just felt that would be fair for us to have as a topic here today. And that is my rant this week. So if you have any comments that you would like to make on this, you can make them at the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. Or you can also go to bicycletalk1@gmail.com and drop me a line on this. I would love to hear what you have to say about it. So, again, there have been some great responses. I'm going to move directly on to a positive side from there. And the big positive side, this one is a local thing. And I know it's, you know, if you're a listener out in California or Oregon or somewhere where I know I have a number of listeners, I know this doesn't mean anything to you whatsoever. But to us here locally, it means a lot. As I was traveling up to the University of Connecticut today to do my radio show and also do Fran's radio show, I saw the sign that said in front of Ledgecrest Greenhouses, 2 weeks till spring. That is very, very encouraging and very much on the positive side for me. So, yes, we have 2 weeks to go. We are threatened with an enormous snowstorm, which I think is going to fizzle because we're way too scared and prepared for it. So my guess is that it's going to fizzle out. But we are expecting anywhere from, 6 to 18 inches of snow hitting us here in early March in Connecticut. Yes, this is what we get out here. So, yeah, 2 weeks till spring. That just brought a smile to my face this morning when I drove by there. I actually saw it twice because I was up at the community center also teaching a spin class. The other thing is, because we are having a horrible alert day here where, everyone is in fear of this monstrous storm, which is probably going to fizzle, but, whatever. There's free parking in the Yukon parking garage today. So... Fran is shaking her head over here on this one. But yes, there is free parking in the garage. So
what was really funny about that is me, you know, driving to the top of the garage, because, you know, I enter at the top of the garage because it's usually harder to get into the bottom of the garage.
Yeah.
But I probably didn't have to do that today.
You did.
So I go into the top, and here's me. I'm desperately trying to get in because I want to go park and get over here. And I'm pressing the button to get the ticket.
And nothing happened.
And I'm pressing.
But the gate's already open.
Oh, right.
That's the clue.
And here I am pressing desperately. There's no card coming. Yes, Fran, there's no card coming. It's okay. Go in. It's all right.
Right. And of course, as you know, if you rode your bicycle here, there's always free parking on campus.
Okay.
So that's a plus.
I didn't want to ride my bike here today.
That's a plus, but it's on the positive side, so that's a good thing.
Okay.
So I've had to make a few little scrambles here. I want to talk about a few things. Well, actually, I haven't hit the maintenance minute yet. So the maintenance minute brings up an old subject, and it is, but it is a subject which we certainly like to talk about a lot here, because I really believe that there's. You know, a lot of people aren't aware of certain things. And one of them, and the big one I find, is bicycle tire pressure. So the maintenance minute is how to achieve the perfect tire pressure on your bicycle. And a lot of people are unaware of the fact that a lot of people are probably overinflating their tires. So, if you want to take a look at the quickie on this, you want to make sure that you pump your tires up, obviously, before you ride. Road tires typically require 80 to 130 pounds of pressure per square inch. Mountain bike tires between 25 and 35. Of course, that is all random, depending on what you're doing, what size your tires are, etc. And hybrid tires generally between 50 and 70 psi. To find your ideal pressure, you start in the middle of these ranges, then factor in your body weight. If you weigh on the higher, the more you weigh, the higher your tire pressure needs to be. For example, a 165-pound rider uses 100 PSI in his road bike, and a 200-pound rider should run closer to 120 pounds of pressure, and a 130-pound rider could get away with 80 PSI. By the way, these estimates are high. In my world, they're high. I am a 140-pound rider, and I'm running probably 75 PSI, maybe 80 sometimes in the front tire, and then I also run a little bit higher in the back, so it'll be 80, 85 in the back. And again, it goes by a number of different things. The size of your tire makes a big difference here. And also, you want to, traditional wisdom says that higher pressure means lower rolling resistance because on a smooth surface, hard tires flex less and create a smaller contact patch. But no road is perfectly smooth, especially out here in northeastern Connecticut. We know that. Properly inflated bike tires conform to bumps and absorb shocks. Overinflated bike tires transmit impacts to the rider, which sacrifices speed and riding comfort. So you want to pay attention to that. And you want to make sure you always keep the air in there. You know, make sure you check your tires before you ride, see if they're okay. Fran always has me bless her bike before it goes out for its ride. And one of the things that I do is I do check the tire pressure on her bike to make sure that everything is okay there. That way you avoid a lot less flats. And so that brings me to knowing whether or not your tire pressure is wrong. A few things. You're probably inflating your tire with a floor pump, which is what a lot of us use. And the pump probably has a gauge. The good of that is that the pump has the gauge. The bad of that is it's not always really accurate, because the floor pump gauges measure the pressure at the gauge. So they're measuring air pressure inside the pump, not inside the tire. So depending on the quality of your pump, you're going to have that be a varying measure of your PSI. The best, they could be off as much as 10 to 15 PSI. So the good part is most gauges are at least consistent. If they're not totally accurate. So if you're consistently putting 80 pounds of pressure in your tire with your floor pump and the tire feels hard to you and you're not getting flat tires, you're probably fine. So you might want to take a look at that. The other one, which I just touched base on here, is you're using the same air pressure both front and rear. Don't do that. Your body weight balance isn't 50-50 front to rear on your bike. And for road riders, it's more like 40% in the front, 60% in the rear. And in most cases, according to the study at the University of Colorado, that can vary. So CU's study found a range from 33 to 67 to 45 to 55 across athletes they tested. So if you're curious as to where you fall, there's a simple test. You weigh yourself, holding your bike, and weighing your kit, including your shoes. So fully dressed, hold the bike, and weigh yourself. Put the scale under one wheel and block and a block of the same height under the other. Have a friend hold you up and then read the scale. There you go. And then swap to the other wheel. Do the same thing. So you put the scale under the wheel, then the block under the other, and the block under the other wheel. So that's how you can figure out accurately what your ratio is from front to back as far as setting your tire pressure. So the other thing that people do often wrong is they don't check their tire pressures regularly. That's a good idea. The thinner your tubes are, especially if you're using really lightweight tubes, they will leach air overnight. So you want to make sure that you do that. If you repaired a flat tire recently, you used a CO2 cartridge. The carbon dioxide is highly soluble and in butyl rubber, which makes up 98% of our atmosphere, and so it typically permeates right through the tube wall and fast. So it's a quick fix, but it's not a real fix. That's why you're talking to good old cranky Pedal and Ron, who loves pumps and is not a real huge fan of CO2. Just another reason why. One of the biggest mistakes, your tire pressure is probably too high. This is something that is seen all the time. If you've moved on to the new way of thinking and you've gone to a wider tire, worked on a bike a couple of weeks ago, it had a 23C tire on it. I haven't seen a 23C tire on a road bike in a while. So I have to tell that person that they might want to consider putting a fatter tire on, because it really just changes the whole dynamic of the bike. Feels better, rides better, everything about it is better. So anyway, check your air pressure, do the cool little test there with the scale, and see how things weigh out, and then decide from there as to how you want to inflate your tires. But I would suggest that less is better, so, and it won't make a huge difference in your wattage output, so that's a good thing.
What about big people who are concerned about pinch flats?
And they should be. And that was covered earlier. As you get the larger the rider is, the more pressure they're going to need. You know, everyone's going to have to figure out exactly what it is. I keep looking for, and if anyone out there sees this, could you please send it over to me? I saw a great chart. Bruce Miller, if you're listening, I saw a great chart that Bruce had showed me a few years ago, and it showed your body weight versus tire pressures versus sizes of tires. And I have been scurrying about trying to find that and have not found that. But once I do find that, I will post it up on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page so it can be readily available. I think it's a useful piece of information. And again, if anyone out there knows where that is and can send it over to me, send me over a link, that would be great. BicycleTalk1@gmail.com. I would like to be able to post that for all of my listeners, because it's important right now. And it really, as far as, especially out here where we're riding on a lot more back roads than in other parts of the country, and probably not as well-polished roads as there are in other parts of the country. Shout out to you folks in California that have these silky smooth roads, or at least that's been my experience out there.
They do?
They have unbelievable roads. They don't have frost.
Oh.
See, you go to, it's probably not just them. If you go down south where, you know, they don't have the cold, if you go to Arizona, they don't have the cold. Wherever you have the cold, you have problems with frost heaves and cracks in the pavement.
I will pay attention when I go to Florida next week.
Pay attention. Because as I remember, the roads are probably in a lot better condition because of that. Because we don't, you know, we have a really funny thing on our road, Bass's Pitch Road, where we live. And every winter, as you get deeper and deeper into the winter, and the permafrost starts going deeper and deeper in, as it then starts getting warm again, and the permafrost starts pushing itself up, the road has a bump that occurs right at the parking lot at the recreation field. And you hit it, and your car actually, if you're driving a car, it bumps. If you're riding your bike, you can actually launch off of it.
Okay.
And so it's just a bump that pops out of the road. It's something to do with what's going on underneath that road surface, and frost is what it is. And,
you know what else
and now
is
it's,
funny?
And now it's leveled back out because we had some warm days, so it's leveled out. So
you know what's really funny is if you go climb up Atwoodville Road, Atwoodville Road, as you're when you go from Mansfield Four Corners, not Mansfield Four Corners, Chaplain.
Bedlam. Corners.
Thank you, Bedlam, yes. Four Corners. So okay. When you're climbing up Atwoodville Road, there's a sign, and it says Frost Heaves.
Yes.
And the sign itself, the letters are kind of heaved up.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I don't know if that was on purpose, but the letters are a little pushed up.
I think someone had a sense of humor when they made the sign. That sounds like it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have these things called frost heaves in the cold climates, and anybody who are listening in the cold climates, you know what I'm talking about. And they tend to, you know, crack the road surface and cause some problems. And so, therefore, our roads aren't perfect. Therefore, but our roads are numerous and really seemingly endless out here. So we have some great, great roads to ride on. But riding with a little bit larger tire really comforts the ride in a big way. And you ride them a little bit softer. That's all. Just a little bit.
You gave me fatter tires, didn't
you? I put 28s on your bike the last time.
That's a lot bigger than 23.
That's a lot bigger than 23.
What does that number mean, 23, 28? Is that how many
it's
millimeters?
It's a millimeter. Yeah,
okay. It's a millimeter width of the tire.
Right.
Oh,
right.
All right.
And you know, different tires have different profiles. So some tires will actually sit higher on a rim or lower on a rim, depending. There's a lot of factors involved. But the key point is, you know, with the 25 or 28C tire, you're going to, on a road bike, you're going to get a much more comfortable ride. On a mountain bike, if you're using a wider tire, you can use less and less air pressure in your tire. Therefore, the tire will conform around the surface that you're riding on better, and you'll get better traction and grip because of it. So, you know, there's really good reasons to lower your air pressure. Now, if you are, you know, sporting more than a few hundred pounds and you're riding your bike, you're gonna have to watch this one a lot more carefully, because you know it's only a small surface that you have underneath you, and you could get a pinch flat. And one of the old school ways of dealing with pinch flats is to talc the tube before you put the tube in.
Right.
And that puts a barrier between the tire and the tube, and if you should squash out a tire to the point where you could pinch it, it sometimes, not all time, sometimes prevents a pinch flat.
We'll slip out of the way.
Now, then we go on to tubeless tires, which is the newest, latest rave out there. I have not yet experienced them. I have some of my shop people that tell me that I'm missing out on two major things in my life right now, and one is electronic shifting, and the other is tubeless tires. I haven't gone there yet. And I know electronic shifting sounds really great and all, but I have some, I don't know. I'm an old school guy, kind of an old fashioned sort of guy when it comes to mechanical things. I really like to be able to work on my mechanical things. I don't want to depend on an electronic shifter and a battery, and I shouldn't worry about it because I know it works really well. I've heard it, I've sold it, I've been through it. But anyway, I avoid that, and I also have so far avoided going with the tubeless tire, which they tell me rides so much more like a tubular. Well, let me reset here to like a tubular. Why is it that every single time a new tire innovation comes out, this could be a rant, every time a new tire innovation comes out, it is compared to being almost like a tubular tire? I'll tell you why. Because tubular tires rock. They ride really different than the other tires do. They're much more fun to ride on. Yes, they're expensive. Yes, you have to glue them on the rim. Or you can tape them on the rim now. I'm still not a taper. I'm a gluer. Yep, same old school Ron there.
And so tubeless and tubular are not the same thing?
No. A tubular tire has a tube in it. A tubular tire has a tube that's sewn into the inside of the tire. So when you take, if you take a look at a tire and you take a look at the two edges of the tire, they're known as the bead of the tire. The bead fits into the rim and therefore keeps the tire from popping off the rim. Essentially, on a tubular tire, there is no bead. What happens is those two ends come together and they're stitched all the way around. And it is a process. It's more expensive, but it creates an entirely different ride when you're riding on the road. Some people, like me, can feel it just, there's no question of the difference. There are other people that ride them and go, yeah, they're all right. They're all right. Too much bother. I don't want to deal with gluing them. I've walked into bike shops. It's the funniest thing. I walk into bike shops and I see people who are working in the bike shops who are possibly newer at experiencing the tubular tire. And I see them trying to glue a tubular, and I just ask them to step away because I can't stand to watch them. They're just going to be covered in glue with the way that they do it. There is a technique to it. And once you've glued your, 1,000th tubular, you get pretty good at it, Just like changing tires, you get really good at it. And when I was brought into the industry, which was, so long ago that, time has forgotten, that's what we rode. We rode tubulars. We raced on them. We trained on them. We rode tubulars. And I still have them, and I still like them. And so there it is. Anyway. I got off track here a little bit. So achieve your perfect tire pressure on your bike. That's your maintenance minute. So you want to pay attention to this again. You want to always pay attention to this. So it may be brought up again in the future. Next on my list. Oh, gosh. Here he comes again. Chris Froome is back in the... he's back. And why is he back? Because there's a whole bunch of feedback right now about Team Sky, and they are in the news because of Froome and the asthma medication he was taking.
Yes.
And apparently they've been using this technique with other riders for a number of years, all the way back to now known as Sir Bradley Wiggins, who is also, So anyway, Sky is in the news, and they have been attacked for inexcusable and unprofessional failures in anti-doping by a British government report into combating doping in the sport, produced by the British Parliament's House of Commons. The report from the Department of Culture, Media, and Sports increases the intense pressure on Brailsford, Dave Brailsford, who is the principal of Team Sky, and former Tour de France champion Chris Froome, still awaiting the results of a UCI investigation in the possibility of him using a little too much of the asthma medication that he was using. The thing is, it has a special use exemption with the UCI, because obviously if you're having trouble breathing, that could be a big problem. So there are exceptions that happen, and there are limits to how much of the drug you can use, and it's somewhat controversial. So it's got a lot of press right now. Chris Froome has won the Tour de France enough times to really put to put him underneath the microscope. So people are looking. I hate to point fingers at them, but I'm going to point fingers at them because they did the same thing with all the American riders too. The French are particularly scrutinous about this behavior, and because they really would love to see a Frenchman win the Tour de France. And of course, whatever, this is what we have. So, The report says that Team Sky's statements that coaches and team managers are largely unaware of the methods used by the medical staff to prepare the pro cyclist for major races seem incredible and inconsistent with their original aim of winning clean, quote unquote, and maintaining the highest ethical standards within their sport. So, and the report goes as far as to say that the team appears to have used drugs for performance enhancement, not therapy. This is in the report. Contrary to the testimony of David Brailsford in front of the committee, we believe that drugs are being used by Team Sky within the WADA rules to enhance the performance of riders, not just treat the medical need. So, harsh words being said by the UK government and their report on Team Sky and their possibility of using the... the medication that's used for asthma for a doping scandal. Oh, my God. You know, I'm reading all this and in the news right now because here in the United States, we have the big NCAA basketball championship coming up right now. It's March. It's madness. And there's now all sorts of reports out about scandals within some of these colleges who were bringing in professional people to service recruits so that they could be, intimidated to signing up for their team instead of other teams. And there was a piece I just read recently that said could be as many as 60 or 80% of the top 25 teams may be involved in this. So between that and also money to the athletes on the side, special deals to get them so they will come to XYZ school instead of ABC school. Not going to mention any names here. I do sit on the campus of a large basketball school, so we're not going to go there. But, anyway, there's a lot of bad behavior, and it's in the news right now. So I look at that, and then I look at, we're worrying about some antihistamines that are being used and for allergy medicines cycling always comes to the light. There's always something out there that is going to bring cycling up and above all these other scandals.
They're not antihistamines. They are bronchodilators.
Bronchodilators, sorry.
Yes, antihistamine would put you to sleep. That would make no sense.
Right, that wouldn't make any sense at all. So anyway, the point being that cycling always gets the big headline rap on this. And now you take a look and look at the behavior that's happening with our NCAA. There's a very simple solution to this problem, a very, very simple solution. The athletes that are recruited to, and I'm going to get some feedback on this one, but I really don't care. The athletes that are recruited to large universities or any universities of which they are being taken care of, paid for, and the argument is the NCAA says, well, you have to give them a free education. Great, you have to give them a free education. But if that was a grad student, okay, if that was a grad student, that grad student is not only getting a free education. This is in some cases, not all cases, but if they're actually working for the university when they come to the university, they're also given a stipend to be able to handle their basic living expenses. And why can't the NCAA cough up a few billion dollars that they have way too many of and help support the athletes that are working their tails off at these universities to make the NCAA and the universities tons of money? I mean, this is a no-brainer. Take care of them, and you won't have as much controversy. The whole problem is, and it all stems back to the bottom line, and the bottom line, it's all about money. It's the same thing in cycling. We see it there, too. We don't see it as much in amateur cycling as we do in professional cycling, but in professional cycling, it certainly is an issue. And, you get paid to win. That's the way it works. And if you can get away with a certain amount of illegal activity in order to win and no one finds out. Lance did it for 7 years. You can make an enormous amount of money, and you can also make an enormous amount of money for your sport. So there are pros and cons to this. I have friends of mine who we go back and forth with this all the time, and I have friends that just say, just legalize it. Screw it. You know, just that's it. If, just make it legal. I want to watch my bike racing. I don't care. I want to watch my basketball. I don't care. Legalize it. Make it happen. It's athlete beware as far as what you might be doing to your body. Personally, I think that's not a totally responsible way of looking at it, and I would be more concerned about the health and well-being of the athlete. But again, money is the key factor here. Money is what drives the activity. It drives the people to do things that they might be taking a chance on. So anyway, this is Team Sky. They're back in the news. Bradley Wiggins is he's dealing with all sorts of allegations here. He is the report said that Bradley Wiggins and Team Sky crossed ethical line in the use of asthma medication. So, the former Tour de France winner has called the allegations a malicious attack on his reputation. And that's Bradley Wiggins. And Chris Froome, he's got, similar allegations out there right now. So the question is, where do we draw the line? Where do we draw the line? That's my big question. If you have comments to make about it, I would love to hear those comments. Please send them over to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Guess what? I'm still going to sit down. I'm still going to watch my bicycle racing. I still love it. I still will always love it. And as a matter of fact, it's March. It's madness. I love my basketball too. So I'm gonna continue to watch. And because as long as there are fans, there will be money involved. And so who is to really blame for all of this? Maybe it's us as the fans. The Gladiators had fans. Remember? So anyway, these are things to look at. So there are some other items on my agenda here today. And as we move on here past Wiggins and Sky and all that, distracted driving comes back into the scene again. And there's a piece here that I found that is actually from Velo News. And the article was, Legally Speaking, Five Things Prevent Justice for Cyclists. So here's the reality, okay? Around the world, there's 1.3 million people a year that die in motorized vehicle accidents, okay? Here in the U.S., we lose nearly 40,000 people a year. Another 2.35 million are injured or disabled. Many of these deaths can be avoided. At least 9 people, this is a great stat, die each day due to distracted driving. Hello, put down your cell phone. Put down your cell phone. No, not you. That's France over there on her cell phone, and she heard that and threw her phone down. That's funny. That's very funny. Ah, yes, yes. The things that you don't see when you're on the radio. Anyway, putting down the cell phone while you're driving is just a really important piece of this. Please, please, I beg you, as a human being, a cyclist, a father, a brother, an uncle, wherever you want to go with this, please put down your cell phone when you're driving. Do not do it. Turn it off if you have to. Put the do not disturb sign on it. Great. Do that. Do not pay attention to that while you're driving. Pay attention to the road in front of you. Please, please, please. Because someday when you're riding along on that road in your motorized vehicle and you're not paying attention, when you do look up to pay attention, you're going to be running over someone who's walking or cycling on the road. So please, please, just put them down. So the bad news for us, the risk created by distracted drivers couldn't be greater than it is for, us cyclists. That's right. Although it is part of our reality as a roadie, nobody wants to read about collisions with motor vehicles, yet it is always in the back of your mind, especially when it comes to distracted drivers. In fact, as a road cyclist, distracted and unsafe driving is now the bane of our very existence. There's no escaping the reality, and to make matters worse, a large percent of drivers feel indifferently about the safety of cyclists. Why is that? Why do they not care about us? I'm missing this. They you know, we hear things like, scofflaw cyclists create their own problems by choosing to ride in the street. Well, guess what? The street's there for both of us. As a matter of fact, the streets were there before you were there in your motorized vehicle. That's what paved streets were made for. They were made for bicycles originally, not for cars or trucks. So, you know, it's bad argument. Bad argument. So, convince a driver that a lack of vigilance could potentially take someone's life is a difficult task. After all, most drivers overestimate their driving ability. I love that statement. That's great. Are you a good driver, friend?
I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm not perfect.
Right, right. But do you think you're better than you think you really are? Than you really are?
See, I'm a bad one to ask because one thing that I think that I'm good at in my life is I have a good mix of humility and recognizing of my talents. So if you're going to say to me, are you a fantastic driver? I'm going to go, I'm all right. I'm pretty good. I try to stay safe. I strive to stay safe. And if you ask me about anything, that's what I'm going to tell you. I would never say to you, yeah, I'm the absolute best at whatever. I'll tell you what I strive to do as a good naturopathic physician, but I'm not going to say to you I'm the best one ever at all.
No, you're pretty good at it though.
I try not to. So I'm somebody who strives to not overestimate my abilities. I'm not a boaster. You know? That's just not my game. But, you know, but people get on their high horses about how good of a driver they are, and that you make a point.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to have to table the rest of this because there's more to this article I'd like to talk about, and I will continue to talk about it because distracted driving is definitely one of those things that it's a tough spot. It's something that really it makes my blood boil a bit, and I'd really like to see some sort of legislation which comes through which solves this problem or at least helps contain it to a certain degree. I have to move on very quickly to upcoming events. Today I was supposed to have a member of the Yukon cycling team on the show because the Yukon cycling team is having a race, and they're having a race right here in Mansfield. It will be an intercollegiate race. More details possibly next week if we can get Nick to come on next week. I still have to look at my calendar and schedule because I know I have some other guests lined up. So we will be speaking with them about it before the weekend of March 24th, which is when their race is. The other thing that is right now, well, wow, it's going on right now. It's the National Bike Summit. It's in Washington, D.C., and it's happening right this very moment. So if you want more information about that, I'll try to have some more information as to what may have happened there after maybe for the next show. We can talk about that. Other things that are happening coming up soon, bikewalkct.org is having their summit on April 6, 2018 from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. And that's at the Lyceum, 227 Lawrence Street in Hartford, Connecticut. You can find out more about that at bikewalkct.org. So check that out. And the New England Bike Walk Summit, April 26th through the 27th, is in Boston, Massachusetts. And you can find out more about that at numeral 1010 times, TIMES.com /NEBWS. And you'll find out more about the New England Bike Walk Summit on April 26th and 27th. National Bike to Work Week is on May 4th through the 18th. I like to bring that up because I think it's an important event. And National Bike Month is the month of May. If you have anything to contribute, I would love to hear it. let me know. My name is Peddlin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute to or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.